And it's KVC Arts Now on KVCR, Arts and Entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. The Palm Springs Plaza Theater just reopened in late 2025 after being shuttered completely since 2014. This after enjoying quite a run, which began in 1936 with world premieres and more. Many may also remember the theater as home to the Palm Springs Follies, who had quite a run there as well. The process of restoring the theater took several years, even in just the planning stages, and while there were many, many supporters and a variety of entities making it come together, it was J.R. Roberts spearheading the operation. They had gotten permits, a plan was in place, and while there were still some obstacles, there were still many windfalls to encounter as well.
Now we're well into construction. We're rethinking our board and what we're going to do. We set our mind to building a plan for management as well as finding the staff that would be required to operate the theater. Now, this is the next great milestone. About that time, Acrisure Arena was being built. And Acrisure Arena, if you don't know, is our big hockey arena that got built in Palm Desert. And The company that built it was a company called Oakview Group. And Oakview Group owns and or operates venues all over the world. They own the Seattle Kraken hockey team, and the hockey team that they were going to bring to the desert was sort of their farm team.
Okay.
So I had a connection to Oakview Group, and one of my board members is a guy named Brian Ray. Brian Ray and I became friends through the preservation world, and Brian is the lead guitarist and musical director for Paul McCartney. And he was the musical director and lead guitarist for Etta James prior to Paul.
Wait a minute, but Rusty Anderson is McCartney's guitarist for the last 30 years.
There's two.
Okay.
So Rusty stands on one side of Paul and Brian stands on the other side.
Okay.
Brian's lead and he's also the musical director for Paul.
Okay, thank you.
But good for you for knowing your rock stuff. You just impressed me.
Well, I was a fan of Wings, but then I also interviewed Rusty a few years ago. Things have clicked together, and then an interview with Al Di Meola involved some Paul McCartney stories as well. And so there's, a lot of cool connections, no matter with whom I'm speaking. So,
yeah. So anyway, Brian's this great guy. And so Brian has a strong connection to the ownership of Oakview Group, which is two brothers, Todd and Tim Lewicki. So, Wikis love Brian, and also they love Paul McCartney, and they've had history where Paul has played their venues and so forth. So, there's a strong connection there. So, the Wikis decide that since they're coming to the desert with their arena, they should have more connection to the city. So, because of Brian and because of their interest in connecting with the city and building a good relationship, they offered me $1 million. They said, we'll be here to help. We want to kind of take on the theater as a piece of the city that we want to support.
Sweet.
Yeah. So I was thrilled about this. This was huge. But there was something even better coming about in this deal.
The guy
they brought from Ohio to build the theater is a man named John Bolton. And John Bolton was senior vice president of the company. And John would go out and he would open venues and launch them. And he came and in 18 months built a fully operational and successful 10,000-seat hockey arena out in the desert. So the guy was kind of impressive. So he was here for a while. He was here for a few years. And he had kind of finished up the arena, or he was finishing it up. And he got to be friends with the board because when the Lewickis decided that they wanted to help us, they said, we've got a guy on the ground there, John Bolton, and John will be our rep. So when you want help and you need other things, talk to John Bolton. So not only did we do that, John and I became friends, and I invited John to actually join our board of directors because John wanted to get involved with the community.
Perfect.
He was. Because of the arena and now the plaza, he's kind of getting well-known in town. Fade out, fade in, everything's going along. We now need to hire management and an operator and a programmer for the theater. John, as a board member, says to me, maybe Oakview Group would be interested. This would be a small venue for them, but maybe they'd be willing to take it on. Let me talk to them. Let's run the numbers. Let me really educate them. So we're now going from sort of their stepchild charity to maybe more, maybe one of their venues.
Yeah, wow.
So Oakview Group, through a lot of back and forth, comes back and says, we'll take it. We will operate, manage, and program the plaza.
Oh, wow.
We're willing to do it. And we won't charge our usual management fees. And they gave us like a very discounted rate of what they would normally charge. And they were just awesome. We were thrilled about this. Absolutely thrilled. I said, all right, well, John, you can't be a board member anymore because now you're actually going to be an employee of a vendor that the foundation is hiring. So remember, since we took over the theater, we were actually the ones hiring whoever would operate it.
Right.
And overseeing those contracts and so forth. Mm. That would be the main job of the foundation now, to oversee whoever we hired to run it. John now just becomes kind of a guy in the background for the company that's going to operate us. But John's going to be involved because he's here. And we don't know for how long he's going to be here.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, he's our face for Oakview Group. Oakview Group puts together a job description for a manager of the theater, for a general manager. Okay. And we send out the job description into the world. And within a week and a half, David, we got 150 applications from all over the country.
Oh, my gosh.
Everybody wanted to come and manage the plaza.
Wow.
We put a decent salary, and I wanted to have really good management. We had high expectations. And I don't have to tell you that theaters like this don't really make money.
No, right.
You're
right.
Lucky if they break even. And usually they have to be subsidized.
Yeah.
And also what I didn't tell you was we were going from 800 seats down to 700 seats.
Oh.
Because we wanted to make more room for ADA. We wanted to do bigger seats, wider seats, and bigger aisles. We wanted to make the theater more comfortable.
Well, it's nice, actually, despite the loss. Those are wonderful improvements that people would notice and appreciate, I would think.
That's what we wanted. We wanted to create an enormously comfortable environment because in our research of other theaters and what people wanted in our analysis, we found that successful theaters were comfortable theaters that offered good quality amenities, great sound, great lighting, and general comfort. And we also learned that artists today are picky. You know, when you go after bigger names, they pick their venues. And if your theater is known for being uncomfortable or not having a green room or not being a nice space to work in or
right,
not having the latest and greatest equipment, they move on. So we made a commitment that our theater would be as comfortable and as inviting to the artist as it would be to the audience. And remember, we're a movie theater. We don't have any extra room. So literally I had to lease space in the building next door to create a green room. And we had to go out and lease more space for storage. And of course, this is driving up our costs, but we feel like it's make or break. If we don't do all this, we are potentially setting ourselves up for failure.
Yeah.
So we went full bore. And when we were offered levels of quality and technology for things like sound, we always took the highest level, same with lighting.
Good.
We wanted to be a state-of-the-art theater.
Yeah.
And we were going to do everything. We're going to do live music. We're going to do symphony. We're going to do film, of course, and live shows. And so we had to have a little bit of high quality for everything and anything. So there I am sitting with a stack of 150 applications. And even though Oakview Group was the manager was going to be an employee of Oakview Group,
mm-hmm.
they wanted our input on who was going to run the theater.
Gotcha.
Who was going to be the hands-on, day-to-day operator.
Right.
So that night, I get a phone call from John Bolt. And he said, JR, my partner and I have decided that we love Palm Springs. We want to stay here.
Oh, sweet.
What if I manage the theater myself? So this would be like having the head of a car making company do your oil changes.
That's nice.
So I remember my jaw dropped and I said, John, are you sure? And he said, JR, I open theaters. I know them better than anyone. Mm-hmm. I oversee them for our company. And I said, but have you ever operated one? And he said, well, I launch them all. I'm the guy who creates their plans for operation for the Oakview Group. And I said, but you don't stay. And he goes, well, I usually stay for a while just to make sure they get launched. So he convinced me. And I remember I ended the phone call by saying, John, you couldn't have called me 2 weeks ago before I was getting boxes of chocolates and flower arrangements from people who were hoping to get the job. And he said, you know, we just realized it. He said, we just fell in love with Palm Springs and we fell in love with the theater and we fell in love with the board. And, you know, we've made friends here and this is where we want to be. And John's in his 50s. So I'm sure he's thinking, you know, he needed to settle at some point and not be bouncing around the country or the world. And I went to the board again and I said, you all know John. He wants to run the Plaza Theater for us. And they all got what that meant and how lucky we were.
Oh, yes.
And so there was a unanimous yes. The first job I gave John was that he had to go tell everyone else they didn't get the job. And we were off and running, David. And now we had John. He was going to be our general manager, so I kind of brought him back into the fold of the board, not as a board member, but somebody very involved that we'd be working very closely yep. with as we started to create what it was going to actually mean to run the theater. So John got intimately involved with the construction. We managed to bring the theater in on time. Needless to say, we had cost increases and so forth, but we already knew them early on. And we opened on time. You know, John was booking the theater 8 months ago. By the time we opened, God, we had 100 shows booked.
The shows and more at PalmSpringsPlazaTheater.com. I'm David Fleming in conversation with J.R. Roberts about the years-long project and process of getting the Palm Springs Plaza Theater up and running again. Not just renovating, not just updating equipment with state-of-the-art sound and lighting, but truly a loving restoration. We'll hear about a rather interesting time capsule and some historic items on display, also some very wonderful discoveries made along the way. In the restoration, JR, something I'd love to hear about in other, just gems like this. To quote the newly uncovered 1936 decorative stenciling across her storied stage. That was just a nice sentence. Whoever came up with that.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so along the way, there were surprises, wonderful surprises. Remember, the Plaza ran as a movie theater, and then it went through that dark time in the 70s. Do you remember the term twinning when they would break up big auditoriums? That's when they were starting to build multiplexes.
Yeah.
And what to do with these big old theaters, they started cutting them in half, putting a wall down the middle and then doing two smaller screens.
Oh, yeah.
And that happened to the Plaza. It
Ooh.
Got twinned.
Oh.
They divided it in half with a crummy wall. In fact, it was done so poorly, apparently there was sound bleed between the films that were playing. So, you know, imagine, you know, having Jaws playing on one side and some romantic comedy on the other, you
Perfect.
So it was just a bad time for movie theaters everywhere. When Metropolitan ceased to run the theater, Sonny Bono came along. Mm-hmm. And Sonny Bono was then the mayor of Palm Springs. And Sonny created the Palm Springs International Film Festival. And he launched it from the Plaza Theater. That was good for the Plaza because for the first time, the Plaza got a little remodeling and it got freshened up. He didn't do a full restoration, but he freshened it up. He got it operating. Not long after that, the Follies ran there. So the Palm Springs Follies, are you familiar with that?
Yeah. Didn't they finally fold or cease in 2014 or something like that?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you've done your research. Exactly. The Follies came in and covered up a lot of what was originally in the theater, because if you look back at images, and you can see some on our website, they sort of painted everything black. They put up drywall over the proscenium. Mm-hmm. They covered up a lot of things because they put neon everywhere.
Oh, okay.
And they were trying to make that Broadway vibe, right?
Yeah.
By the time I got it, it was really sad. So all of that had been stripped away. So what I had was a bunch of ugly drywall. All the neon had been pulled out. So there was just walls full of holes, ceilings that had been broken and used. But coming back to your original question, as we started to peel it away, we found the old theater hiding. So as an example, to your point, he had covered the proscenium.
God.
And when we uncovered it, unfortunately, they didn't paint it or destroy it. They just attached drywall to it with screws.
Mm, good for that.
They did a wood base, and they attached all this drywall. When we pulled all that down, we found all the original paintwork. This was happening all over. And fortunately, like, the original chandeliers and lighting had never been changed, thankfully.
Good.
All the original paintwork in the lobbies on the ceiling was still there.
Oh, wow.
Nobody had ruined that. So much of the original beautiful hand paintwork was still there. It needed to be restored and cleaned.
Mm.
You know, it now had 85 years of nicotine and dirt and dust and tar. And so we could see the paintwork, but it was dim. And when we cleaned it, it was like Technicolor.
Wow.
And so we cleaned it and we restored it, and it was gorgeous. We went through a very elaborate restoration of all that work. And the village scenes on either side of the auditorium were meticulously restored. And fortunately, a lot of that was original, so it was completely restored. And then the rest of the money was spent inside the walls, where we brought the theater up to today's earthquake codes.
Okay.
So we were opening the walls and putting steel in and taking it all the way up to the roof, as well as a new roof. And up above the auditorium, there's another 8-foot-tall space.
Oh.
And there's a huge elaborate truss system that holds the ceiling. And so all of that was enhanced and strengthened, and that was all tied into the new steel system, steel and concrete that we were putting into the walls so that we could bring the theater up to today's codes.
Oh, that's phenomenal.
And then we went through a lengthy and dramatic, and almost lawsuit with the owners of the building on one side of the plaza, which the plaza was originally part of a bigger land area. And the city, when it acquired the plaza, acquired the restaurant next door or in front and the candy store Brandini's, which is another storefront. Later on, the city sold off everything around the theater, and a developer came in and bought it all, but didn't want the theater itself.
Oh, interesting.
So the city ended up with the footprint of a building and nothing else. And it had easements out the front and out the back. It had a 10-foot easement to the sidewalk, and it had an easement in the back out the stage door to the sidewalk. And when we started the work again, the fire department came in and said, codes have changed. You need a full 20-foot easement in front for exiting.
Oh, my gosh.
Then there was 24 feet there, but the restaurant had taken half of it and put in an outdoor dining area.
Oh, right.
So we went into a tug of war with that developer, and the city ended up having to spend a tremendous amount of money to buy the easement and replace it in front with a parklet type dining area, the type that got famous during COVID.
Okay. Yes.
That took a while, and, you know, we're well into construction, so we just have to keep going. So all that negotiation was occurring while we were in construction. We had to get it all done, and we had to solve it all. And a lot of it took almost right till the end. And we moved the dining space off. The city built them a gorgeous new dining area out front. But see, we took possession of the theater in mid-November. In late September is when we got rid of the restaurant dining room. That's how tight everything
was. Oh, wow. Oh, my gosh.
All that was being built during the summer in the heat. much of the restoration was done in that heat.
Oh.
And, of course, the theater got all new heating and air. It got all new electrical, all new plumbing. You know, all that tech that we were adding in required, you know, miles of wiring and piping and everything else. And new elaborate fire suppression.
Yeah.
And the new HVAC system we put in was a newer concept and higher level of technology, where instead of pumping the air conditioning and the heating through vents in the walls or ceiling, we took up the entire floor of the theater, the concrete floor, and we put the whole system in the floor so it gently brings heat and air directly under the seats.
Oh, wow, nice.
And so not only did that create a much better control of climate, it got rid of the hum that you often get in theaters,
yep,
where they're pumping air into the room.
That's right.
You know, the hum that those big air handlers make.
Oh, yeah. So beyond the decorative stenciling that we heard about earlier, these things that you uncovered, some other gems that were just found and, of course, brightened up with this loving restoration.
Well, I've got a great story for you.
Excellent.
And I'll give you the shorter version of it. And then if you want to interview again, we can, because there's a lot more. Did you happen to read the history of the theater, how it came about?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the helicopter ride up to Santa Barbara to get an idea of what they wanted to build and then flying back. And then, so yes, there's a lot there.
But David, even more than that, the woman who built it and where the money came
from. Yes, that's right.
Julia Carnell and the $1 million casino win and hiding it from her family building the whole La Plaza Shopping Center because she wanted a place to shop. You know, her connection to NCR, National Cash Register. You know, Palm Springs was built by women, and the plaza was built by one woman, and she paid for it all. And there are more stories. We can talk about that. What we have not talked about is the time capsule, and that's a story in itself. Another great milestone. So we're going to do a museum component to the theater.
Oh, cool.
In one of the exit corridors along one side, it's full of windows, and we're going to do the story of the Plaza Theater. We're already collecting things for it. We have Margaret O'Brien's Academy Award. You know, we're starting to put together the history and the people that were involved with the theater. So I meet this guy named Jim Cook, and Jim's sort of this Hollywood historian, but to a magnitude that I had no idea. And he knows more about Hollywood and Palm Springs than anyone I've ever met. And the guy is just this delightful, delightful, humble, sweet guy who's had a long history in the industry, and he wants to be involved with the museum. So I bring him in. I have created a separate committee to be working on the museum component, but I'm starting to meet and hang out with this guy, Jim. And he teaches us more about the plaza's history in 2 weeks than we had learned in 2 years.
Wow.
And he goes so much deeper than we knew. And he found every article and every story from the era when it was built and prior to its building and everything else about Palm Springs. But one tidbit that he finds out, and it was so important what he was getting. Remember, David, you know, the theater was built in 36.
Yeah.
We only had black and white photos, so we could do paint analysis for the walls and things like that. But we didn't know the color of the curtains. There was a lot of things that we simply couldn't know because we were only looking at black and white photos.
Good point.
So Jim would find, like, a tiny little news story from 1936 that talked about the opening, and the reporter referred to the shimmering blue curtain. Things like that we could then jump on. Originally, we didn't have a blue curtain planned. So we went and researched all the blues from the area and had a blue velvet curtain made for the theater. So those kind of pieces that came together to help us do a true restoration. So Jim was this powerhouse. I just fell madly in love with him. And when you meet him, you can't not love him. In fact, he should be part of your story, because when you talk to him, you just can't get enough from him. He's an amazing storyteller, but in the good way. So one of the things we found in all his research was the time capsule. And the time capsule story, I'll give you the fast version of it. He found this buried little story, again, about the opening. When the theater opened, it was a major, major event because they were premiering the film Camille, and not a second premiere,
right.
It was the world premiere of a Greta Garbo film.
And Greta herself showed up, yeah.
Yeah, and Greta showed up. But before the film, there were three people brought up on stage. One of them, I think, was Hedda Hopper. One of them was one of the film stars. And the other one was Julia Carnell. And they brought up a box of concrete. And they buried a reel of Camille in the concrete.
Oh, wow.
And then they all put their hands in it and signed them a la Grauman's Chinese Theater.
Right.
And then they took this box and they buried it in front somewhere. And we went through a lot of time and effort to try to find it. And I think we pinpointed approximately where it was, again, mostly through Jim's research. But it was gone. And the problem was it was out in the courtyard. And over the years, there had been some remodels of the courtyard. And we think in one of those remodels, it was probably pulled up. People didn't know what it was.
Oh,
and
no.
It got thrown away with the rubble of the concrete of that remodel. But we searched and searched and searched. But we know it existed. And we even have a picture of the women on stage with the box.
Wow.
So there's those kind of fun stories as well.
Incredible. I look forward to another session just like this. JR, this was wonderful, and I can't wait to just talk with you more or hear more about this.
Next time we should do it in the theater, David. It's magical to be in there.
Truly, I can't wait. More on the theater and going away from what it took to open again to look at the historic treasures this restoration has produced. Thanks again to J.R. Roberts and again to Sandy Hodela for making the arrangements for this wonderful conversation. Here at KVCR, thanks to Rick Dulock, Adam Rainey Ruiz, Diego Munoz, and Sharina Wad. Many past shows can be found through Spotify, iTunes, NPR One, or many other podcast sites, and most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. Music beds and themes heard on KVCR is composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support. Please consider making a contribution to your public radio home, KVCR. It's a minimal commitment of time, maybe 2 to 3 minutes, and that's whether you're setting up a sustaining membership with an automatic monthly contribution of $5, $10, $15 or so, or if you're making a one-time gift. Both take just a few minutes of your time, and either can be set up at kvcrnews.org/support, day or night. And again, thank you so much.